Welcome to Movie Richard's Movie Month, where the Atlantic Voice Network's very own in-house critic, Movie Richard, looks at what's out and about to be out at your local multiplex. I'm Zeph, and here now, the man at the concession stand, Movie Richard. All right, it's Movie Richard's Movie Month for June. Movie Richard, how are you, my friend?
I'm well. I'm well. I'm happy. It's nice out. I'm calm. I feel cool and collected, and I think that's what the summers are all about. So I'm excited to finally have this movie.
But not cool in the sense of being indoors in the movie theater, because they're still not open.
And yeah, that's been the hardest part.
Yeah, because it's weird, isn't it? This whole thing is you have time on your hands, but then you don't have the things to do with time that you normally would do.
It's new to me because. And I've been using this joke a lot, and I feel like most of the millions of our followers will understand, but I've been a germaphobe far before it was ever cool and far before it was a national emergency. So avoiding corona for me has been easy.
There's a t-shirt in there. I was a germaphobe before it was cool.
I'm trying to hold on to all of them because I think I have five of them that I'm going to pass over to my good friend, the leader of this show, and let him do it. But I think I got some phrases for you guys. And one of them is that one. And my second best one, I think it's appropriate. I think it fits the narrative as well from a variety of perspectives. It's imagine being a black germaphobe during a pandemic in Washington, D.C., a.k.a. the Millennial Civil Rights Movement. And I'm going to leave it there.
Well, you know, you're going to leave it there, but I'm actually going to pick that up. And I think we would be insulting our listeners if we did not acknowledge the fact that this is I want to say this for both my partner and I first and foremost. We are not sociologists. We are not professors. We are not politicians. We are everyday people. And if things come out of our mouths in terms of terminology, I'm going to say in advance, we mean no offense by it. So
absolutely not.
With that in mind, I was going to say this is a turbulent time in the country, in the world. And I know that word may not be strong enough for some people, but again, our hearts are where they are in terms of what we mean to say. This is a turbulent time. But we felt, and you and I talked a lot about this in preparation for the show, we felt that we could pay heed to the fact that society is talking about different things right now, but also keeping it within, what this show is
about.
The realm
of what we've always had.
Yeah.
I mean, for all of our millions of listeners, what they know is we actually have done, in my opinion, the English voice you hear is my guiding tool in a variety of ways, and I appreciate the opportunity to even have this platform. But I want to be very clear. If you've been listening to two or three, or for those of you who've been subscribers all the way through, we almost never speak about politics. And even though we live where we live, and that's, I think, in close proximity to the White House, I don't know. I would say that we have tread the waters over the last 4 years of a lot of other instances that have nothing to do with what we're about to speak about politically now. But I think it comes to a point in time where I think ESPN's doing it. We're right there with them as well. FS1's doing it. A variety of platforms are finally speaking, not specifically about all of what's going on, but using their airwaves to show their perceptions and their opinions, and especially since we've had a pandemic, they've allowed a lot of athletes and other journalists as well to speak their mind. So what we're doing, I think, this time around on Movie Richard, the ZYRS show is what I call it. We're just addressing it because through movies and film.
And again, I want to pick up on what you said there. So obviously, listeners, if you did not know, Movie Richard is African American.
Absolutely.
And as you probably guessed, I'm not originally from these here parts.
Yes.
And I will say myself, I'm technically mixed race.
Yes.
Technically by the letter of the doctor and your DNA.
Very clear.
We bring those perspectives to any conversation that we have. Yeah. And I think, I'm going to make a grandiose statement before we start. Mm-hmm. Sometimes whenever in any forum where race is a topic or race is a undertone, I think all of us feel, you suddenly feel like whoever you are, you might be treading on eggshells. And at that moment, you suddenly become very guarded about what you say and how you express your opinions. So, and before I let you go, on this show, we're not going to talk about race. We're going to talk about movies. And by having an everyday conversation, hopefully we can take some of the stigma out of discussing issues that some people might go, oh, you're bringing race into it. Oh, that's controversial. No, we're still talking about movies this show. So people shouldn't suddenly go, where's the off button? I can't deal with this. No, but we're going to talk about movies, and we're going to talk movies within the concept of how you and I both see ourselves and other people and within the world.
That's it. And the last thing I would say, and I'm not, and you did it, you articulated that point so clearly that all I'm going to say is, even if anyone felt genuinely triggered, and I am aware of what that means, if nothing else, as an African American or as I've called myself, no one has called me this but myself, a Black American. I've lived, just real quick, 14 years in the reddest of the states and 14 years of the bluest. So if the itch has killed you in terms of feeling uncomfortable about your surroundings, imagine being me before the pandemic. And that's all I wanted to say there. So let's dive into these films and let's see where it goes.
All right. So obviously, as an African American, let's talk a little bit about, you know, some African American films. And so, I want to be clear when I say this now.
Yeah.
African-American films, first of all, by African-American filmmakers, but they don't have to be about the African-American experience. And I know you can't go anywhere without talking about Spike Lee, and I presume you're going to start it first. But again, two of his, he has so many great films.
Yes.
Two of them are 25th Hour and Inside Man. And I don't regard them as white, Black, African-American, Jewish.
Exactly.
They're films about New York. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. I agree, and I've met him. So, yes, I understand. Yes, I actually met him in about sixth grade. He signed something for me that had social media existed, I would still have. But no, I've met Spike Lee. He is exactly who he has shown on television. There is literally, without cutting off any further, there is literally not even a percentage point of difference between who you see at the Knicks games, who you see in the Jordan commercials, and who you see behind closed doors in North Carolina.
Absolutely the same guy. Before we dive into some of his films, I wanted to say that too, as an extension of that, like who you see is who you get with Spike Lee.
His films
are very much an extension of that. And what I mean by that is, and again, I'm going to talk about in some quarters, the most lightweight of his films. Inside Man is a heist movie. That's what it is.
Yes.
Inside Man, in a strange way, probably has more in common with, you know, Ocean's 11 or any other dudes getting stuff out of a bank movie than it does anything in terms of the rest of Spike Lee's career. But that being said, you know, it's got a great cast of some Spike Lee regulars such as Denzel Washington and John Turturro. So there's a white guy, there's a Black guy. But also, in terms of Spike Lee's personality, it's not just a heist movie.
Yes.
It makes a statement, and I said at the start, it's a film about New York. It makes a statement about city living and, you know, that sort of notion of 50 people in a room all with 50 different stories to tell. And so it is a quintessential Spike Lee movie because it is about how he sees the world.
And yet,
it's not a racially charged movie, which I think a lot of people would
tag his films, would
try and put his films. Yeah. And yes, you know, from Do the Right Thing to the work he did in New Orleans, you can make that argument. But if nothing else, Spike Lee, the dude, is talkative and opinionated and entertaining and passionate.
Yes.
And you see that in his films, regardless of the material.
Agreed. I've always agreed with that, and I think even for me, like, I look at Spike Lee's entire database of films or sonography, whatever you want to call it, I don't even count the iconic films, and I'm going to explain why. Because all of the iconic films, and I'm going to really go through what you just said a little bit more quickly, and because I think you hit all of those points. To me, the iconic films that are kind of tagged as Black or Black movies, trust me, every black person at some point, and a lot of other people outside of the black community that may be white or maybe other people of color, have seen him. But I think what speaks to your point more clearly is that how that tag, in a weird way, has taken a lot of his, I would say, critical acclaim away. Because when I think Spike Lee, the Denzel film, Malcolm X, that's an easy one, right? Inside Man, that's an easy one.
Okay.
I'm going to leave the 1991 film off of this particular conversation. I'll bring that one up in another in another episode. But he doesn't, in my opinion, you don't hear people talk about Miracle of St. Anna. You don't hear people talk about Kobe doing work. I don't feel like he also gets a lot of credit, in my opinion, for a film like He Got Game, which in a weird way, if you're going to talk about a black film and you're going to talk about a black Spike Lee film, you would think He Got Game would be one of you would think it would be as big as Love and Basketball, in my opinion.
He is very much talking about the nature of being a black male in He Got Game.
And with an all-time great cast that we may never see again from that perspective. Also, just a great basketball story. Like, for me personally, and I can't speak about coaching because I haven't coached basketball in like 10 years. That wouldn't be fair. But I used to kind of joke with players, regardless of where I was or what they look like. You haven't seen He Got Game, you know, like, what are we doing? That was a joke. So it's easy to try, and that is that, I meant nothing by that, but it's easy to kind of look at all of the black, quote unquote, films that he's done that are iconic, that are, I think, apprehensions of the world, and then where black people are living in. But if you really type in Spike Lee films, or just Spike Lee on your phone, and look at the movies, I think a lot of people have already forgotten that Black Klansman was his. I think a lot of people have already forgotten that the irony in Black Klansman and Malcolm X is Denzel Washington's son is who played that role.
That's right.
So there's so many little things. Inside Man, like you said, that should have been called a Spike Lee joint. If you really, really think about it, Denzel Washington, black cast, white cast, robbing a bank, Denzel Washington. I would have thought that would have been one of the first films that would have been called a commercial Spike Lee joint.
Because
Spike Lee joint. It's New York.
You use that expression, Spike Lee joint, which is what he always puts over. All his movies are Spike Lee joints.
Yes. Yeah.
Inside Man feels Inside
feels
Man
to me
in,
like
just
Spike Lee
in the way. And it doesn't matter whether it's conversations between characters, whether it's even in the. So, for example, Christopher Plummer would not be on your list of, in the same way that Christopher Nolan has a cast of dudes he goes to, Christopher Plummer would not be a dude you would think is on Spike Lee's cast of dudes he would go to.
Absolutely.
And yet Christopher Plummer's performance and character in that movie, because of the way Spike Lee directs and films and writes and has influence on everything, Christopher Plummer does not stick out like a sore thumb.
Agreed.
Because it's a Spike Lee joint. And a Spike Lee joint, I think, and I'm going to make this statement, and I'm going to use a movie now as an example of it.
Yes.
I think on purely movie-making terms, I think unfortunately for Spike Lee, he's always regarded as a black filmmaker and not a
filmmaker. Yes. Yeah, and without
And I'm going to try and back that statement up now.
Yeah, go ahead. I want to hear this. Yeah.
25th Hour.
Yes.
There's a lot of things about 25th Hour that are interesting for Spike Lee to be involved in.
Yes.
It's not an original screenplay. It was based off some guy's book. It was brought to him, apparently, by Tobey Maguire, who'd had optioned the book and said, look, I'm an actor. I can't do anything with this. And so when you watch it, Tobey Maguire is listed as an executive producer. So Spike Lee took it, with the exception of Rosario Dawson. That is a white leading cast. Yeah, Ed Burns. What's his name? Barry Pepper. Philip Seymour Hoffman. Brian Cox. That is a movie that isn't. That's a movie that's about New York. It's Spike Lee's 9/11 movie.
Agreed.
I don't think that movie. Now, if you said to me, if you put me against the wall and said, is it one of Spike Lee's best four movies? I'd probably say no. But that
I
being
would
said,
definitely no.
I would say this: It's still a very good movie.
Agreed.
But it gets forgotten because, well, why isn't Spike Lee telling a black story?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, yeah.
And I think that's my point is I think there's this, but Spike Lee's become regarded as an African-American filmmaker. He's not. He's a filmmaker before anything else. And just because Inside Man isn't about the black experience doesn't make it any less of an achievement.
And can I cut you right there? Because you really said that so clearly. Because here's what I've always said. And then people go, before I even dive into what you just said, a little the same way, just articulating it from an Xbox. If you say to this same group of people who are a little afraid of how Spike Lee has, in my opinion, efficiently spoken about the quote-unquote black experience. If you go to these people and go, he's really just a black Quentin Tarantino. Oh, the response is, okay, I get it. I get it. He is. He is. But here's the thing that has always bothered me without really diving into it. When white actors speak about white situations, it's a movie. And regardless to if they go into a black neighborhood or not, it's a movie about white experience.
Okay.
Is in it or not, that is a choice. And that is a difficult choice depending on the context and the content matter and the production and et cetera, et cetera. But I've never really – well, we may dive into it later. I've never truly held it against a person who's not black for maybe leaving out – horrific elements of their story when they are choosing to fund it, which is a tough one. But at the same time, this has been my biggest issue. If you want to even dive into the black culture and all of that, F. Freddie Gray, in my opinion, has been more accurate than Spike Lee. So if you were to even suggest, like,
do you think?
Yes, because, and I'm just going to say this without diving all the way into that. We are all aware to some extent.
Because I also think he's made some before you.
He has.
I also think he's made some artistic choices where I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You're better than this. I think he's ended up with some material that's been put in front of him, and it's like, no, you're better than this. Why are you doing this nonsense? That's my opinion on him as a filmmaker.
No, I agree, but that's not all his movies. In it. But here's the irony in it. When he does that, when he does what you just said, he doesn't get the black label at that point.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
But the irony is Spike Lee gets a lot of credit, and I'm saying some things that I actually think black listeners are going to find a little strange, and I'm just going to defend myself. Do the Right Thing. That is an iconic film to me that cannot be debated from any perspective. And I actually think as we go further into the future, it is going to be revisited. The Michael Jordan commercials, no need to discuss it. And we've already gone through a lot of what Spike Lee has done. But we've been questioning or just curious as to why he remains with that black label tag. Now, here's the difference. If you were to compare black films, if you want to even call it that, which – to a certain extent, maybe on a later show, is a part of the issue. F. Freddie Gray has done all of those, been able to go outside of the box and fail, then come back and do Fast and Furious, and then also do, I believe, Coming to America Again. So to me, what that shows me is a pantheon that has broken the monolith that Lee has existed. Has two definitions.
But
he exists in that one. He's a black actor who finally it's the Leonardo DiCaprio thing. Leonardo DiCaprio had 8 great films before he was finally got his what we all knew was a best actor for all of the work he done previous. Do we really want to sit here and say to this black film, white film, whatever you want to call it, that Black Klansman, which I loved, which Adam Driver honestly stole the show in. Was that Spike Lee's – should that have been his crowning moment when you look at the whole – call him whatever
you want.
But
that is the Oscars though.
Exactly.
That is an Oscar thing. I don't think that's anything to do with anyone's race. I mean, again
– I agree. To a certain extent.
I'm going to say this. I'm now going to talk to our older white audience. Everyone knows that Paul Newman didn't deserve an Oscar for Color of Money and that Tom Cruise did. But then Paul Newman had gone 40 years and not won one. So yeah. I do think with Spike Lee and Black Klansman, well, it's the fact that, well, where was the love for Do the Right Thing and a lot of stops on the way? Do you think that part of it too is for Spike Lee? That because he was the first, whereas you know, you talk about FGG, you know, John Singleton, just two other names, you know, even now.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? Because my microphone went out for a split second. Could you repeat that question? Because I literally lost.
So I want to ask you, do you think it's because, do you think that Spike Lee carries the black filmmaker tag because he was the first and he was great?
Definitely, in a way that
FGG doesn't have to, in the way that John Singleton doesn't have to, in the way that Jordan Peele, frankly, doesn't have to. And Jordan Peele has made his movies make a stronger statement about race.
I agree.
In the way that Spike Lee does, but again, maybe it's just because Spike Lee was the first, and that's just the way he has to roll for anyone who's the first. If you're the first woman to fly a plane, then that's who you are. Do you know what I mean? Rather than anything else. So, maybe that's, you know, unfortunately. I don't think it's tough. I also don't think there's anything unfortunate about it. What I mean by that is, you know, Spike Lee, he's a great black filmmaker. Well, he's also, but then the words great and filmmaker also appear in the sentence. So I guess at the end of the day, if you're Spike Lee, I don't know.
Here's what I want to know.
I think he's more than happy to be the first guy. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think he has a problem being that. He has no issue being himself.
But
here's the thing that I've always said, and I'm going to just very slowly make a slow comparison between John Singleton and F. Freddie Gray and then him. And then, you know, Peele to me definitely doesn't count for a variety of reasons, because he, in my opinion, was able to come off of the backs of Dave Chappelle on Comedy Central, which is a whole separate situation,
in my opinion.
Let's start with what you said about being the first. I agree with what a pioneer is from that perspective. But here's my issue. Why has that monolith followed him? Because I have never heard, because when I say it, it's weird. Wow, that's a really good white director. So then I want to talk about John Singleton and Freddie Gray. Because if this were an issue of first and then tag, why is the white experience never called the white experience? It's just called a film.
Because that's the industry that makes the rules.
Exactly. So now speaking to John Singleton and the differences between – and I'm going to start with him before F. Freddie Gray, because I think F. Freddie Gray has kind of been the baby of them both. I'm literally going to read the quote-unquote black films. I think this is very fair.
Okay.
Boys in the Hood.
Right.
Okay. We could stop right there. Baby Boy. I'm just going to read them for the people who've seen these, because – and I'm not saying you haven't, because I want to compare – right now, I'm actually going to compare black films, the highly regarded, between two icons. I'm going to leave race out – race from the perspective of it being non-black out of it for 1 second. Boys in the Hood. I could cheat right now. Baby Boy, Hustle and Flow.
I'm sorry, you broke up. Can you start again from Hustle and Flow?
I'm sorry. Yes. I'm sorry, because it's this old Xbox.
We are having some technical issues this week, listeners. But don't worry, you're not going to miss a thing. Start again. So you read Hustle and Flow. What was the movie after Hustle and Flow?
So Hustle and Flow. Then I slipped this one in, and I'm not going to say it again. Black Snake Moan. That was a tough one. I'm going down beyond that. Badass. Michael Jackson. The Maya Angelou film. The Mary Jones film. And so if I were to – oh, Luke Cage to a certain extent – if I were to compare just the tag black films, because I'm not going to pull Abduction with the guy from Twilight, that wouldn't be fair. If I compare John Singleton black films to Spike Lee black films, it's literally, and I'm sitting here just looking at it while I've said that, it is a blowout. I'm actually afraid to do what I'm about to do on my Wi-Fi.
You know, I know where you're going here, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah, I know.
Because that is a blow-up, but I can't stop. So I'm going to type in F. Freddie Gray Films while we're all here, because this is the benefit of work being – we're in the summertime. Because there's a film that I just want to say, and when I say the name, if you guys can give me 30 seconds – moderator, because you continue, because I want to make sure I have this film list, because when I say it, it will be fair and square. We've already moved Spike Lee out of
who directed the NWA movie.
I'm trying not to,
because you know something, all of a sudden once you throw that in there,
I'm not trying to do it, man.
The scales start leaning one way or another. Was that FTG or was that John Singleton?
I believe it was technically both from what I remember, okay. But I'm pulling that up right now because this, you led me
You get your facts straight there. I'm also going to throw in another filmmaker, and I'm going to make a statement that perhaps may or may not be true. I don't know, but I'm going to make a statement. Steve McQueen gets left out of many of these discussions. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, to be fair, his filmography is still the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't go more than 3 or 4 movies deep. But that being said, he has worked with some of the greats, including Pitt, including Fassbender, including a lot of people. Including Ekafor, who I always mispronounce his name.
Oh, and by the way, I appreciate that.
Do you think so? Yes. I think because Steve McQueen, because he's not of these shores, sometimes gets left out of conversation.
Oh,
altogether.
He does. We have to. That is the next conversation for me. If in the next show, hopefully, if we take race out of it from black and white and go international country to country, I think we end up in the same place. But for my audience, because just so we're clear, because we have a fluid show that goes in a lot of places, but that is just the nature of the show. We have agreed, I believe, we have established that John Singleton has surpassed Spike Lee in terms of black films. And I'm going to show you right now why he's only competing with Mr. Gary Gray. I call him Freddie.
In terms of the black experience.
Just blacks. Just. I'm not even going the other way because that would be cheating.
Because I'm going to defend Spike. I'm going to defend Spike hard.
I want you to.
Okay.
I want you to. So let me read these. Black films only.
Okay.
Straight Out of Compton.
Yeah.
That's recent.
Yeah.
Friday.
Yeah.
Set It Off. I can stop. Right there, but I'm going to keep going down. I'm going to say this one just because R. Kelly, TP2.com, that was a great documentary. I'm going to leave that one there. Oh, Crack House, had forgotten about that. But we could end it, honestly. We could end it with Friday, Set It Off, and Straight Out of Compton, because I'm leaving a few out that I could use. Friday, Set It Off, Straight Out of Compton puts him way ahead, in my opinion, of Spike Lee. Because you also, in my opinion, have to look at who he birthed. Because we give a lot of credit, in my opinion, to Spike Lee with what he's responsible for. And I have just wondered sometimes, was he just the first and was okay with that? Or did these John Singleton and F. Gary Gray, who I call Young Freddie, that's, I know Felix, and his name, his real name. I don't know him personally. I can't compare black films to black. Straight Out of Compton, in my opinion, could almost by itself in 2015 take Spike Lee out. When you give me Friday with that, it's over. And when you give me Set It Off as my third, I do this right here because I'm not even reading my favorite films of his, which are also multiracial and also better. I'm going to put my phone down and I'm going to charge this up because I want to really hear your defense because that's a tough one.
I am going to do this. And if you remember, we've already painted the lines on the road that says that Hollywood ultimately is historically, like so many industries, it is an industry whose parameters were set by you know, very white Anglo-Saxon middle class business structure. That being said, what I would say to defend my man Spike Lee is that he has. You love boxing, don't you? You are a boxing.
You
fan.
Know that.
You are,
I'm a
you
fan
know
of fighting and boxing specifically,
right.
Yes.
So you sit there and you start listing. I'm going to just say middleweights. You start listing middleweights and you can have a discussion about who the greatest middleweight is. But you know what keeps certain people in the discussion longer than they should? The dudes who fought at two or three different weight categories.
Agreed.
Right. So Spike Lee, he has on screen, he may not be the best middleweight. So if middleweight is being the most prominent African-American filmmaker making films about the African-American experience, he may lose head-to-head to John Singleton. But you know something? Spike Lee has, with Inside Man, with 25th Hour, has punched at the welterweight division and won.
By doing Michael Jordan
adverts and even now, doing Capital One adverts that you watch and you laugh, he has shown, oh, no. I can reach a mass audience doing my thing. I can have the mass, I can influence the mass culture doing my thing. He's also won at the heavy middleweight level. So what I'm saying is, he may not be the greatest middleweight. But man, he's one of the greatest boxers because he to his credit, he has, and this is why, the criticism I've thrown at FGG, I don't mean it in an African-American sense.
Yes.
His other movies.
Suspicious.
He's got some ones in there and you go, well, that's just a pretty run-of-the-mill whatever it was.
Yes.
And at that moment, in my mind, I'm not talking about a black filmmaker or a white filmmaker. I'm just talking about a dude who couldn't deliver that script. And I'm like, you know, dude, you got away from what you're good at to do this.
Yes.
And this isn't very good. Do you know what I mean?
Because I find
that when Spike has moved, you know, into different arenas.
Yes.
He's always top of his game. I mean, again, you talk about Miracle in St. Anna. Now, Miracle in St. Anna, to me, that's a war movie before anything else.
Agreed.
It's a very good war movie.
Yes.
Now, Mons Crusese's never done a decent war movie. I don't think he's even tried. Do you know what I mean?
No point.
And modern Scorsese hasn't really done any.
Scorsese type films.
Scorsese doesn't really do kitchen sink human relationship drama.
I agree.
Right. And, you know, so what I'm saying is just in terms of now, as a filmmaker,
Spike Lee, I got you here.
Spike Lee has thrown lefts and rights and knocked out opponents in three or four different weight divisions.
And that is a big deal.
He won the greatest boxers of all time.
I'm ready for this.
In a strange way, we're having an argument that neither one of us can lose because ultimately
you're
top quality filmmaker.
Yeah, and I'm going to use in response, and this is why boxing is so difficult to ever tell who's the greatest, even though we all are aware of the fact that it's Floyd Mayweather for a variety of reasons. Ray Robinson, and I'm gonna come back right into the movies. I just want to make sure for all of our pugilism fans to kind of understand how masterful my moderator, my guidance counselor in every way, my leader was with that. He did something that a lot of people born before me have done, but they used the wrong analogy. Because if they did, they would use Ray Robinson. But then they do what he just did, different weight classes. And I was prepared for that in a friendly way. So now that we've established that black-to-black films, Spike Lee's not number one, let's talk about different weight classes, which to me is what you just articulated.
Yeah.
What Canelo Alvarez is doing right now.
Right.
I'll go all the way up to light heavyweight, and I fought all the way at 147. For anyone who understands boxing, that is about 45 pounds of weight. And that Manny Pacquiao, same thing. 8 divisions. Lineal champion at 4. Not happening again. So let's compare with these three, which I still don't think it's a comparison, outside of the box. Let's leave race out of it for a second.
Sure, because in a strange way, we're only comparing them because of their race.
Exactly. So let's do this. So now, John Singleton, not just black films. Too Fast, Too Furious, Four Brothers, Higher Learning, 8 Mile, which I held on to. I held on to that one.
Yeah, I held on to 8 Mile. Okay.
And then I'm going to switch over to, because I love this Samsung phone, the S10. I'm going to switch over to FGG. It's already over when we're talking about weight classes and moving all around. Straight Out of Compton, give me, that's a black film. The Fate of the Furious, that's Fast and Furious 8. The Italian Job, Men in Black International, that was horrible, but he did that. Law Abiding Citizen, I'm going to give you another one. I'm going to give you guys another one.
Okay.
A Man Apart.
Oh.
I'm gonna give you another. Ooh. Oh, no. Please hold on, because I know that you're going to have a cool. One of the funniest films I have ever seen. Be Cool, with The Rock playing, and this is the synopsis. The Rock and Vince Vaughn and John Travolta and Uma Thurman. Let's also not forget a black film that I didn't even see. Murder Was the Case. And Lord have mercy, if you don't know that Calvin brought us is Snoop Dogg in his peak, you're already out of the conversation. And then the last one that I would just give, because I know people didn't watch it, The Sea of Trees, and I'm going to leave it there. So when I talk about, rather, we are fighting, and I'm going to do it like this now, so if anyone got confused, and sometimes I provide context fluidly and it gets misrepresented. If we're talking about boxing, and let's pretend that John Singleton is a boxer, and let's pretend FGG is a boxer and Spike's a boxer. You know who Spike Lee really is to me, in my opinion?
Okay.
He is.
Sugar Ray Leonard?
Yes, extremely overrated, in my opinion.
Sugar Ray Leonard is extremely overrated.
Hold on. Let me just say this. Tie it to boxing, because I don't want this to turn into – I have to tie it to film, because if we turn this into boxing and film too much, people will turn it off, because I'll trigger the boxing part. We know, all of us know, deep down, if we use the parameters that were just set, moving up and down in weight classes, fighting the best, Floyd or Sugar Ray, it's Floyd.
Yeah.
If we do it again and we say Sugar Ray versus who I'm going to – because Sugar Ray is Spike Lee. Oh, he's great. Yeah. Should have used Sugar Ray Robinson, but not – everyone always used Sugar Ray Leonard. Would Sugar Ray Leonard, any weight, go up, go down? He's not beating Floyd, and he's damn sure not beating Sugar Ray Robinson.
I was going to be very harsh, because I think Sugar Ray – and I would not. This is not turning into a boxing show. Sugar Ray Leonard, I've always criticized as being style over substance.
Agreed.
And while to bring it back to Spike Lee, Spike Lee, there are moments when it is all style. Mm-hmm. But you know something, unlike Sugar Ray Leonard, even when there's not a lot of substance in the source material, there's like Spike Lee has done many exercises in style, but he has never done an exercise in style to hide the fact he's got nothing to say. And I would say this, the only film where that may have been the case, where you could make a case that's okay, is Inside Man. I don't agree there, because Spike Lee is saying something about city life.
And I would agree with this as well, what you just said. If Spike Lee makes a film about anything in New York and it gets tagged as anything other than a Spike Lee film or a New York film, then I think, like, at some level it's already gotten awkward. But as you just made a great point about Sugar Ray Leonard, a lot of pugilists, a lot of boxers, when they've been dominated physically by somebody that they spoke a lot of stuff to, they have to use other tactics to beat the mind before they can beat that fighter. And anyone who has watched Hands of Stone, I think it's Hands of Stone, would also understand that Sugar Ray Leonard is, in a lot of ways, maybe not all the ways, but in a lot of ways, more Spike Lee than we ever would want to admit. And that's all I would say about it.
Okay. But Sugar Ray wants to be compared to Spike Lee, not the other way around.
You gave him a much nicer, him being Spike Lee, you gave him a much nicer boxing tag than I was. So okay. I'm going to be generous and step out.
Okay. Again, I mean, it's interesting. It is interesting that in a strange way, you know, we've said that Spike Lee at moments probably got a lot of props because he was the first great black filmmaker. Mm-hmm. But I also think, as we've just established, that for better or for worse, he also gets judged by a much higher standard because we can sit there and listen to oh wow, that's a John Singleton movie. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? There's something great in the fact that dude loses some of these matchups.
Well, I'm just gonna say it in a very politically correct way, so we don't get in any trouble at any level. Spike Lee is the only one of these film directors who, in my honest opinion, maintained the black culture within himself publicly all the way through. And if you were to ask me as a black person who was looking at three icons, and honestly, as you said earlier, we could put Peele right in this just for the film Get Out, but that is for another show.
Well, so when you finish your point, I do want to come back to this comparison because I want to stick up for the other two guys in a moment.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and I'm sorry because I'm going to adjust it when you're talking because my feedback's a little weird on my end. But all I would say is this. I have made an argument myself about Get Out without diving into that film right now because it's just – I don't think
this that's is another show.
That's another show. That movie in itself may be more meaningful to black or white race relations, or if you want to call it black film, whatever you want to call it. White film, whatever, IO, whatever. That may be the most meaningful film in the history of quote unquote black cinema or a black director. And because I think it is all of who Peele is based on his experiences coming through a film, but he maintained himself, whatever that means, I just think being himself way before he and Keanu, that opportunity.
But I'm going to say this ahead. Though. I'm going to say this though to that point before I cycle back to what I wanted to say about John Singleton and FGG and Spike Lee. I think Get Out is the race. All movies ultimately are for their moment and of a time. And what I'm saying is, yes, right now at this moment in time, Get Out perhaps is able to reflect more now. Whereas Do the Right Thing, if you go back and watch Do the Right Thing, it still feels very late 1980s.
I agree.
It hasn't, because again, through no fault of its own, it hasn't been able to then bring in the new millennial attitudes to so many things beyond race. Whereas Get Out, which is 20 years later, is able to incorporate those viewpoints. So what I'm saying is there could be a film 20 years from now where we go, yeah, Get Out was great, but you know something? This film
I don't see it. I used to say
after Do the Right Thing, that was the definitive
statement.
They're
different, though. But I want to say this because I think that
– these films were all of their time, to a point.
Yeah, I agree to a point. But I will say this. Without getting – because no pun intended – I know that at some point in the future, Get Out is going to pop back up on one of our episodes, and we can dive into this.
Because
I hope our listeners remember this, what I'm about to say, and then we come back to it at a later episode. Here's the difference to me in comparing Get Out to any film that has been tagged black, a black film.
Okay.
I was in the theater, and I call it a theater. I know it's theater, but I call it a theater. I was in the theater with a 99.9% white crowd. That is the only way not predominantly white, because that could technically be majority. That could be like 51%, 75%, 80%. I'm talking about I was the only black person in there, and we had all come to see what this film was about. There is not a single person. There are a lot of people who lie now about it. There's not a single person that I contacted for almost 2 months, white or black, especially black, unfortunately, whatever that means, that had not seen Get Out when it was released and knew what that climax was going to be. And the reason I can't compare it to black films is because Get Out covered all of it in one film. The black experience was frightening to a certain extent. the white experience was frightening to a certain extent. The black, quote unquote, maybe stereotypical behavior was frightening. How and what that meant, maybe if you were to say potentially Caucasian leftist behavior was maybe a danger as well without really saying anything. All of that was covered in the final 20 minutes. You sure. go, wait a minute. That is unlike any – and I looked around because I actually, for the first time in my life, which I'm not going to dive into why this is ironic because I was safe. I was here in a very safe place. I almost wanted to calmly leave because I was afraid that someone was going to say something to me. And based on where we live regionally, the likelihood of that happening no matter what is almost 0%. So that's why I can't compare even if you were to say black experience.
But I am gonna not necessarily compare.
Yes.
But I'm going to attempt to rationalize the differences. And this is my point now. So you give an example. I was in an audience where it was 99% white. Okay. But here is the difference. And again, I remember Do the Right Thing in the late 80s. And I went to the cinema to see it.
Yes, so okay. I have that experience. Yes, that's big.
You are surrounded in reality with a crowd who walked into Get Out and for all kinds of different reasons, primarily the internet, kind of knew what they were getting into.
No, I didn't. That's a big piece of this.
See, I don't think there was a single white dude in the crowd who didn't at some level have a sense of what they might be getting into. Whereas 30 years ago, when you walked in to Do the Right Thing,
everyone,
the mere fact that you are walking in to watch that film is making a statement about who you are.
Exactly. Agreed. I agree on that.
Again, I think there are a lot of people. And again, I'm not – we're sitting here making generalizations about people. There are a whole lot of people who would walk in to Get Out, and yes, they could have been oblivious about its undertones. But my point was when Do the Right Thing came out in the cinema, you didn't end up in there by accident. You either
said,
I ain't watching any of that, or you're going, I don't know who I am, but this guy, I want to hear what this guy has to say.
Can I ask you a question?
And that is the difference. Both? It's a difference in eras, not so much a difference in film.
But let me ask you a question since you've seen both. And I don't know when you saw Get Out.
See, I didn't see Get Out in the cinema.
See, that's a...
And that's a big difference. I was like, yeah, because again, as an older dude, I'm going to watch that on Netflix.
Yeah, we have to speak about that off the air.
Right.
Because that is why I struggle with the comparison. I'm going to tell you why, again.
Because honestly, I don't do that kind of like horror or whatever.
Exactly. And that is...
So I'd already pre-genre it. I'd already pre-genre category.
You just said it. No one knew that I am telling you because I went to see it because I love horror. I didn't know any. I don't even like Jordan Peele at that point because I was salty about him and Peele and Key and Peele, which had a great show. I was still a little bit bitter as a black man with two other black men who I, to a certain extent, felt like should have literally. And this is too much to ask of anyone, no matter what community you're in. They should have literally figured out a way for Dave Chappelle to come back. So before I go any further, when I was in Get Out, I never experienced, and you know, and everyone here knows I go to films, I think, more than anyone in 29 years consistently. I have never in my entire life, no matter how good, no bad, no matter Selma, that was a statement. That was a statement. Are we going to go see Selma? Are we going to go see... I hate to say it, 12 Years a Slave. Those were statement films where if I saw white people in them and black people in them, it felt closer to what you were saying. When that last 20 minutes of Get Out unraveled, I have not heard since of a person who went into it or watched it without reading what was going on. Any of them who knew, who could predict, that was the climax. A lot of people watched it late and thought they were going to watch a horror film. And if you watch the advert, that's how I got in the theater. I would have never seen Get Out had it not been advertised as a horror film.
But I want to explain this.
I trust you. Absolutely.
I made this point about it being about age. And what I'm saying is this, and this comes back to this whole notion of, oh my gosh, Spike Lee, John Singleton, geez, that's a better movie than that movie, blah, blah, blah. When you are Spike Lee, Whereas Jordan Peele, nowadays, with where the world has turned over, with millennials being the ones spending the money, and I'm not suggesting people's I'm not suggesting that people's attitudes to the world are different, but what I'm saying is, I think it is fair to say the people younger than me, yourself, are much savvier about things than I was at that age. So what I'm saying is this.
None of us knew that either with that film. I just want to be clear.
So so Jordan Peele knows going in, I can make a I can make a horror movie and say something about race. And obviously, as a act of creation, it's subtext and text and whatever. And you can enjoy that film on a couple of different levels if you want to. And what makes it a great piece of movie making is that it all works as one. But if you just want to go in that, if you're doing your thesis and want to watch that movie and just write about it's what it says about race, you can do that. If you decide, you just want to spend $7 on a horror movie, that movie works for you in that same way. What I'm saying is, but here's my comparison now. Spike Lee, 30 years ago, didn't get to do that. He had to make a movie that explicitly made a statement about race. And what I'm saying is,
that's fair.
What I'm saying is, the next generations don't have to do that. So I'm going to give you another comparison now. And I'm old enough to remember these things. Sidney Poitier.
Also fair.
Sidney Poitier.
My dad is my dad's favorite of all time. Dad, I love you.
And you look at Sidney Poitier's career. It is great. It is great performance after great performance.
And we
but he is also in movies that explicitly, whether it's Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, whether it's what's the one where he's tied to Tony Curtis, the Defiant Ones.
I can't. I have to. This
the Defiant Ones about the two ex-cons on the run, and one is white and one is black. In the Heat of the Night, he had he was in movies because it was of a different time where they are explicitly about race, and you are watching a black leading man play a black leading character in a movie about race. Whether it's a comedy, and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, whether it's a cop thriller in the Heat of the Night. So let's fast forward. Let's fast forward 40 years. Denzel Washington. He is a black leading man in movies about black characters. But with the exception of historical dramas like Malcolm X, he can just be a character and you can, for example, we talked a couple episodes ago about submarine movies. Crimson Tide is a great piece of, it's a good old fashioned action movie. It's got two bulldogs of leading men playing two characters going against each other. The racial difference between them is all subtext, right?
I agree.
So what I'm saying is, a movie in the 90s could do that. Whereas 30 years ago, when Sidney Poitier was a leading man, it had to be about race. Just because of where it is in history. And so that's what I'm saying is, for Spike Lee and Jordan Peele, the challenges are slightly different.
At those times, not now, but at those times.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm not going to speak to. I'm going to defer to my spiritual guardian and my counselor here with Sidney Poitier, because once again, I think I would have to have my father as well on this show for me to say not only what I feel,
I'm not saying it's easy or hard. I'm just saying it's a different time.
That's true.
And so the challenges on the actor or the challenges on the director are different.
I just want to say this about Sidney Poitier, and I actually hope that sneeze resonates with everyone. In my opinion, I'm going to use only like half a sentence, one sentence. That was his entire career and how it was handled, shenanigans. I also want to speak about
– It's a different time though.
Get Out.
That's the trouble.
I know. And that's why I'm not
make it right. I'm
not going to dive in because I was not alive, so that would not be fair. But I will also say this because we referenced Get Out, and I'm not going to get into it, but Allison Williams, who I have spoken to myself.
Oh, really? Look at you with the name drop this week. Allison Williams. Listen to you.
I don't like doing this. I don't like doing this for this reason.
I've got two guns, one for each of you.
I'll just say this. I spoke to her because she's a soccer player, and I love soccer as well, and there were jokes made about soccer. But I just don't personally believe Because it's time will tell. Because a lot of people have changed their opinion on Get Out and what they knew. I remember when it came out. I remember for almost 4 to 5 months beyond it, if it was time similar, I was specifically, because I was curious, me, myself, movie Richard Spencer, I was curious how many people had seen it, one, how many of these people were black and white, two, and what did they think after they saw it? What I can tell you as a millennial who was in college too long with other millennials, every single person I was trying to get to see it beforehand was like, man, I don't want to see a stupid horror movie. I would beg. I would pay for some and leave. When they left, black, white, whatever, Hispanic, from Spain, Mexican, from Mexico, Puerto Rican, from Puerto Rico. We were all at the same school for different reasons playing soccer in college. I was not working there. Not a single person, man, woman, child, black, white. It was so heavy that I remember specifically almost 80 millennials. There was not – I was probably the oldest person there because I was 24. No one knew what to say about the last 30 minutes of that film. And that was also before the director's cut, which I will not speak about at any level right now, with the alternate ending was released. And that is the only reason that I hesitate to compare to past films, because I wasn't there and I side with my elders, I side with my leaders who were there for both. But it's not fair to watch Get Out on Netflix. And you're not the only one guilty of this. Many older people said, I'm going to read what it was about and then I'm going to watch it because I did not want to watch a horror film.
Right.
The second you know at any level what the ending is going to be, to me, the entire experience has been compromised.
Okay.
Because when you're in it organically, I thought it was a horror film. Okay. I didn't understand. What I was trying to figure out is, without speaking about the racial element, I was trying to figure out why was Allison, I think, Williams cast with the guy from Black Mirror in a horror film that there's no horror in the trailers. Because my attitude, and I've never said this, I don't think, on this show, was if it is as bad as it looks, I'm going to be out of here in 30 minutes. And the only reason I did not leave was because I didn't really have anywhere to go. Because where it started was not where I was like, this is not anything I'm interested in. And I'm going to leave it there because I want to hear, you know, but what you think from that perspective.
Well, so again, and so I've tried to make this point that nowadays,
yes.
Because
it's more open.
Because
anyway,
as people, yeah, we just, you know, we, it's.
If that was a, I mean,
how we view, that how was a sneak attack. How any of us as people view and discuss topics is defined by the times we are in, and
that's
by
fair.
Extension, it would go for filmmakers. And so the point, maybe what I'm trying to make is,
yes,
filmmakers have a slightly different. Because again, let's not. We have to be fair on them as filmmakers too.
Yes,
I think we bend over backwards to talk about them as black filmmakers.
Yes.
But any filmmaker wants to make. Spike Lee don't run around wanting to make movies that just two people are going to like. All these dudes want to make movies that make money and do well so that they can make
funding.
More movies.
Yes. Yes. So he doesn't always get the funding. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is, that if you're a Jordan Peele, mm-hmm. if you are Steve McQueen making 12 Years a Slave, You have to at a couple of different levels.
Amen.
If any of those dudes tried to make Do the Right Thing now, the executive, black or white, are going to look at them and go, this is all you've got for me? Some people aren't happy about race and it ends up in fighting? No, I've done this. That is so 1993.
Yes.
Go away and come back with something more sophisticated.
Yes.
So at that
and
moment.
And they're also going to say that don't come back with anything about Emmett Till.
Right.
And don't come back. The guys who made that show that was so popular on HBO, Game of Thrones, they also said, without diving into it, you can be creative, but we also don't want a re-image of a movie called The Confederate States of America. We don't need to see the future had the Confederacy won. And I'm going to step back out because you said a crucial point with Stephen McQueen and 12 Years a Slave. So I'm going to step back out.
I was actually then going to veer away from that and compare with another. So I'm talking about those guys now.
Yes.
They have to say something about race because that's their topic. But they has also have – the bar is different for them in terms of how they deliver their message.
Yeah.
Whereas 30 years ago
– yes. It was Spike, all on the line.
Spike could afford – he had to dunk the ball. Yep. And he also could afford – he could afford to just drive the lane. Spike didn't get the win on points. He had to knock his opponent out. Whereas these other guys now – they do have a very different set of challenges.
Yeah, they get a jab.
Right.
Yeah, they get a jab.
So I'm going to give another – I'm now going to compare, and this is unfair now because this is now white filmmaker.
Okay.
So around the late 80s, there is a movie, and again, I love the cast because I love Gene Hackman, who we've talked about there.
Yes.
Who's worked with the great Denzel Washington.
Big fan. Big fan of Gene Hackman.
Shout I love William Dafoe, who's worked with everyone, including Spike Lee and Inside Man.
Yeah.
They're in the movie Mississippi Burning. And it is about the FBI.
Can you repeat that? My microphone went out for a split second.
They're in the movie called Mississippi Burning, which was made by British. Right.
Yes.
So it's about it, and it's a stylized version of the FBI chasing down some Klan guys that have killed two young black men and a white man.
True story. True story. All of that. True
now,
stories.
When that movie came out, no, I like that movie.
Yes.
One, I love the
I
actors.
I love that film.
I love the story. When that movie came out. And you can go online and hunt down reviews. When that movie came out, people hammered it for having a childish neophyte way talk about. Oh, so what you're saying
like
is
American
the FBI?
History X.
So what you're saying is the FBI solve racism? Who do you think you are? And the film, I was like, no, I'm not trying to say that. All I'm trying to
say is
law enforcement ended up involved in racially charged issues. And
that's
by telling that story, the dude was like, I'm just trying to show a period in time. That movie got hammered.
That's not even a story.
That movie got hammered by the white mainstream media.
Yes, just like American History X, which I have nothing else to say about that film right now either, to be honest.
But I sit there and I go,
yes.
No, but the Mississippi Burning is a film, it's definitely got some flaws. But the notion in the late 80s that a white filmmaker at least attempted to make a statement about something and the fact that it got laughed out of the room, I'm like,
I agree with that.
Seriously, what the hey? And I don't know if, and again, you can't compare because it's a different time. If an African-American filmmaker tried to tell that story now, would we react the same way? Would we talk about it differently? I can imagine if a black guy tried to make it, people would go, he might get criticized for giving Law and Order a pass. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. So, it just depends on the act. I agree with that.
So many of these films, like any film,
gets
the wonderful thing about this medium is the fact that it is timeless. That you and I can sit and we've just talked about Sidney Poitier movies. Now, Sidney Poitier movies are 60 years old. Yet this medium, and I think this is the difference with TV. We might not watch TV from 60 years ago. We might not watch shows from now in 60 years' time.
Timeless is timeless. Transcendent
is transcendent. And you reference Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is all the rage now. But in 60 years' time, will people still be watching? Will people go?
I think it's trash.
Right.
And I will think it's trash in 60 years. And I will say the same thing I'm going to say right now about trashing HBO.
Whereas in cinema, the magic of cinema...
Yeah.
It ages in a different way and it is timeless. And I think sometimes when an audience watch, we watch from our moment in time, yet sometimes you have to almost watch it.
With the moment, context being appropriate.
Try and find the context of the moment it was made.
Yeah, and you can only do that with older people, in my opinion.
And that's true too. And that's why I have a different, and that's why I take my position on both Get Out and Do the Right Thing. Because I am of Do the Right Things time.
I put it to you like this, though. First off, I want to take a step back and take a very, very light jab at Game of Thrones. Very light. Two light jabs. first.
I don't watch that.
It's going to fail in the future because Khaleesi's can only be one person. And everyone who watches that knows what I mean. Second, it's going to fail in the future because Reign of Fire had better dragons. So I'm going to leave Game of Thrones alone from here on out because I don't even speak about that show.
Hey, Matthew, and then I want to
say one more thing. I just, without saying too much, if one of my favorite friends who's also English, who you don't know, and I've had this conversation with him because we used to work together back in North Carolina. If he had taken, because he watched it late on Netflix as well, if he had taken his family out, the missus, his few kids, I think he has like a few boys and a few girls, I don't remember. If they had all seen Get Out together in the peak of its release without reading the reviews, I would have him called into this show, and I think he would bridge that together for you because in the theater, I am telling you, and only people who did not cheat because it wasn't even in the reviews. It wasn't even in the reviews because I read the reviews.
And that's the thing.
I don't like this. I don't want to see this guy make this because I'm salty about Dave Chappelle. There was nothing in the reviews because there were none, and the synopsis was not even close to what it is now. And that same person who probably led Mississippi Burning not being what it should be, in my opinion, an iconic film, same with American History X, that same mentality is the reason that Get Out does not have 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was one single reviewer.
Some people just don't want to go there.
Exactly. It's a sneak attack for everybody.
It is the reason.
Exactly.
To bring it full circle. It's the reason.
Yeah, yes, sir.
The Do the Right Thing goes down in history with a whole load of films.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Where you go, seriously, that didn't win?
Absolutely. Do the Right Thing's top three.
And I will say this, but I will say this about, and again, so much of it is based on an audience and its time. Mm-hmm. And I tried to make the point earlier that I think that Get Out's audience, you know, again, it's a different generation from me. So I
can I tell you what I saw really quickly? Because when I was in Get Out, let me tell you what I saw. It was all, and I have to just say it in the politically.
It weren't people my age.
Yes, it was.
It was.
That is what I didn't want to get to. When I went to see Get Out, and I know where I saw it. I just don't like giving location.
No, that's
out.
Fine. Don't do
that's
that.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's very strange that people who do that are not Joe Rogan. It was myself, and I'm 29 and down. At that time, I was even younger. And I'm just going to have to say it. It was mostly old, elderly, like, white couples.
Interesting.
Like, it was literally – like, I'm going to be honest with you. When I say young people, I'm talking about, like – I think I was the youngest person in there and the only person under the age of 35. I'm being – dead serious.
Because
a lot of my young friends passed it. A lot of those people were just they watched all of Key and Peele on Comedy Central after Dave Chappelle, and I think they were just in to support him. I'm telling you, there were no millennials. I saw it twice. I just wanted to see if I was misrepresenting my experience.
But I would say this, and I did touch on this earlier. I think the notion of the time we're in now and how we engage with information. Yeah. To your point. No, I didn't see Get Out in the cinema. No, I've watched it on TV. B, like most movies, I've read everything I want to read about it before I watch it. So therefore,
I don't do that. Yeah.
So therefore, the movie may not speak to me in the way that the filmmaker intended. The movie,
yeah, you got what, prepped.
I am prepped. So wherever I'm going to be on any film, I'm already there at the end. I'm already there when it starts to a certain extent. I will say this.
I'm never there.
I will say this, and again, we, you know, because we've used, Do the Right Thing as sort of this other bookend of an era, you know, Do the Right Thing. Most reviewers, if you were lucky, you read one or two reviews, depending how many newspapers you came across. That was the reality in 90. I read one review of Do the Right Thing, and that was in the Washington Post. Because I was
and I'm not surprised by that.
Because what I'm saying, there was no internet for me to go on and see the Wikipedia page or scour 17 different reviews.
And I wish it was like that now.
So, so at that moment, when you walk out of Do the Right Thing,
you are the review.
You are the review, the movie is to an extent. Any movie, whether it be Scooby-Doo from 1991, the original Batman, the movie is 80% fresh to you. Still think now, and again, I'll read stuff to death now. And so when I see the movie, it is either confirming what I already think I know, or it's going, yep, whatever. Whereas back in the day, movies were a much fresher experience in that, wow, this is all new. I had no idea.
And that's my mentality. I'm a back in the day guy. Okay. I read no reviews. I said that way specifically. I do not read reviews. Because every single time I've snuck, and it's only in my whole life, I'm being completely serious with our audience. In my entire life, I've probably read an entire paragraph about five different films because I cannot stand hearing things early unless it's something like the special effects are crazy. I can't wait for people to see it because I don't like other people's perceptions altering my experience. And then I'm going to segue away from that. I think if we did a poll right now, which we're not because that is not the nature of this show at this particular time, and you were to ask black and white or everybody, it's everybody because there are more races than those two anyway if we want to go that route. What's the better black film, Friday or the previously mentioned film from Spike Lee? I would just need to see the numbers because I just cannot fathom.
I think it depends who you are. I think it depends how old you are.
Friday is getting watched by white kids all the way through.
That's what I'm saying. I think it all depends on your...
I just can't fathom. I have never heard, and I'm using white children in particular because I've been in school with white children, black children more specifically across the country. I, to this day, have heard two things that were strange. One, Space Jam was a black film, which I'll take it. And two, I've never even heard of Spike Lee. So it's hard for me. And I'm talking about some black
If some dude had both those opinions, that dude is an idiot. That's what I'm telling
it's
you
been
right
at the
now.
Same table.
Space,
it's been at
Space
the same
Jam
table.
Is junk. I don't care what anyone says.
Oh, my God. That's another show.
That's another show.
I will accept that show is that movie is black if it is being given to the black community. Because I think Space Jam is what it is. But so what I'm saying, I'm sorry.
As we get to the end of the show, I'm going to try and bring things full circle because you have enlightened me on a lot of things, but most importantly, the notion that, oh my gosh, Spike Lee is not untouchable.
He's not.
Because
Sugar Ray Leonard.
I've needed an African American to point that out to me.
Yes.
Because as a white guy, I hold on to my Spike Lee-ness. Like, I'll defend that to the end of time.
I've met him. I've shook his hand. I hold on to that literally, but he's just not. He's not Floyd Mayweather.
Here is the interesting thing, and I'm going to make a statement now, and we have said this because, again, you know, for better or for worse, in the time we're living in, race is a subtext to everything that we do. And even myself and my partner have had a great conversation today. Spike Lee has evolved in terms of how he's had to deliver his message because, and this comes back to so many different things, whether it be one's race, whether it be how much social media one uses, whether it be how much internet one takes in, and where you are, you may be some at midpoint of all those things.
Yes.
Spike Lee probably knows I can't get away with some of the dramatic tools of the trade.
Yeah, I mean, he's burned himself too much.
No, what I mean is, though, he has to make a different kind of movie. Otherwise, people are going to sit with their arms crossed and go, seriously, this is what you're bringing me?
Well, I'm just going to end on this, and I'm going to let you take us out, because I think that Spike Lee and Sugar Ray Leonard was just a perfect, all-time great.
I know, and I can't stand Sugar Ray Leonard, too.
And I know, and
I've always said he's a phony.
I've tied my hero to
a phony.
You did this to yourself, so
I know.
Please let me speak my piece, because I'm going to let you have the floor, because I love Box Rec, and I'm going to explain, and we're just going to compare really quickly why Sugar Ray Leonard? I'm, I said,
Hagler beat him, man. That's a travesty.
I tried to say it to his face. I tried to say this to this man's face, and he would have beaten me up.
Hagler beat
him.
That.
Oh, no, 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 no. Please let me speak my piece, because you talked about moving away and all these weight classes and stuff. Robert Duran, he lost unanimous decision. Yep. He won the next one on TKO. Yep. We know why. There's a film on that.
No mass.
Thomas Hearns, come on. We know. Hagler, split decision. Come on. Thomas Hearns again, split decision draw. Come on. Robert Duran, unanimous decision. We know what he did. Then he loses to Terry Norris. I guarantee the majority of the people here don't even know who that is.
Do not remember. Isn't he a darts player?
Hold on. I'm not done. I'm not done, because then I'm going to step out. And then he got taken to school, like on the bus, and dropped off by Hector Camacho. And the reason that all of this is so funny and ironic to me, because even though he is one of the greatest welterweights, he's also from North Carolina, so this hurts me. He's also from Maryland. It makes me justify
Potomac, Maryland.
Why I'm saying this, because I am not a Maryland guy. He retires 36-3. Never gonna be Floyd Mayweather. So
good looking, good looking 36-3 though. Sugar Ray.
You know, come on. Has Floyd ever had a tough fight? Not really. Has Sugar Ray Robinson in his prime, when he was fighting 180 wins and like 14 losses? I'm not talking about when he got set up to take losses. No. There is not a single boxing fan. Maybe people before me who are in love with Sugar Ray Leonard for some reason, because he's a brand. No one actually thinks deep down, and I hate to use those general phrases, that he would ever touch Floyd Mayweather or even Manny Pacquiao. Let's go outside of the race, because Floyd and Manny Pacquiao were not getting slapped twice at the end after multiple draws. Tommy Hearns, I have to be honest, who would have, in modern times, put this man, Sugar Ray Leonard, out of the ring. Morgan Hagler, who, in my opinion, was not allowed to put him out of the ring. Roberto Duran, who, in my opinion, also would have put him out of the ring. If you have all those fights now, and they're going to start doing this, guys, on pay-per-view, and it's going to be the fairest thing we've ever seen with how they genetically engineered it, I can guarantee you we will return to this in a year. And this guy, Sugar Ray Leonard, who no one even picks him on the fighting games. No one even picks him on the old fight night games. His legacy will be completely undone, because it's just not even close. I don't care if he had 8 belts. I don't care if he went up and down. Sugar Ray Leonard, a.k.a. Spike Lee, is just not close to a Floyd, because Floyd fought his Hagler. He fought his Hearns. That was Manny Pacquiao, who also has more credentials and recently just knocked out a prime person at 42. When those two fought in the jungle, all of them, like all the big fights, guess what happened? Manny Pacquiao, maybe the greatest offensive threat we've seen, not efficiently, he couldn't land a punch. His numbers went down. He couldn't land a jab. And I'm going off the top of my head, because I want to make sure everyone understands what I'm saying. Sugar Ray Leonard's out of this. So, but when Floyd Mayweather, you can call him FGG or you can call him John Singleton. When he went up against his Hagler and his Hearns and his Duran and his Hector Camacho, never was competitive. So I'm just gonna leave that there, because we also left out Shaft.
We're gonna do that on a different show, and wrap it up, because I'm gonna let Richard say goodbye to his audience, and I'm gonna throw one jab back at him before we leave. But I am gonna say this. We did not get to talking, having that discussion, but we were going to have that discussion, because we did have a great discussion today about the nature and about opinions and rankings and whatever you want to be of the black filmmaker. Here's the bottom line. But here's the bottom line. I'm going to say this now to maybe the audience that are desperately trying to get through life and just pretend that the bad things are not happening. Okay, if that's how you see the world, that's fine. But you know something? Yeah. Watch any of these dudes' movies, the ones we've named. Because if you love film, you're going to sit back and go, wow, that was great.
Absolutely.
And I will
That's
say
a
this
nice
last
jab.
Thing. Yeah.
Yes.
And I will say this last thing.
Yeah.
The most exciting, I think it was 9.5 minutes in the ring?
Don't do it.
It is. Yes. It's Tommy Hearns versus Marvin Hagler, man. Sit YouTube that 9.5 minutes.
I've watched that fight. Who did you say?
Tommy Hitman Hearns versus Marvin Hagler. That is the most exciting.
Yes.
Three and a half rounds. It was just two dudes.
Best of that generation. Yes.
Of that generation. There's no like, oh, let me feel you out for a minute and a half. Two dudes, the bell rang, and two dudes went at it.
Fighting.
For 9.5 minutes.
Yeah, so make sure when Anthony Joshua beats Fury, we apply that. And also remember, exciting is what got Frank Bruno hurt twice. So I'm going to leave that out of my English audience knows what I'm talking about, and I'm going to leave it there.
Ruby Richards, say goodbye to your fans.
Oh, and Floyd Mayweather knocked out the English god, Ricky Hatton, as well. And I'm going to step out there. I've enjoyed this. But, guys, I want to also say my moderator, my best friend, one of the people that has been there for me as a young black person, if however you want to call it, in this part of my life, the last 5 years, I appreciate you. And I appreciate this opportunity to inform. If you guys like this at all, I think part two, where we really dig into what was initially proposed for this,
we will. We're going to go.
Will be just as exciting. Thank you,
because there ain't no new movies to talk
Richard's
about.
Movie Month,
you're right.
The production of the Atlantic Voice Network. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_Voice, via email at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com, and on the blog at AtlanticVoice.net. Movie Richards, Movie Month.